You guys know I'm crazy about Audible because it offers an incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, including the latest bestsellers and new releases. Audible really is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment, with female writers and heroines, celebrity narration, multicast productions with immersive sound design, and traditional audiobooks. Audible has you covered for any type of excitement that you're looking for. In fact, right now I'm listening to The Second Husband by Kate White. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/realitylife or text realitylife to 500-500. That's audible.com/realitylife or text realitylife to 500-500. With four daughters and two on a dance team, I can tell you we go through a lot of mascara in my house. But I'm crazy about L'Oreal Paris new Panorama Mascara, which catches every lash from corner to corner for maximum volume. If you're looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank, this is yours. The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. I've been using it for about 2 weeks now, and I feel like my eye has completely opened up, and the girls are crazy about it too. They've got a tapered brush to catch every lash, one of the best mascara wands that I've ever used. And like I said, this luxe appearance of this gold package, you got to get it. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today. L'Oreal Paris new Panorama Mascara. You're going to love it.
The amazing Kate Casey.
Welcome back to another episode of Reality Life with Kate Casey. I hope that you've had a great week, and I have an outstanding episode for you today. I first wanted to remind you to catch up on all the episodes this week. I now have 4 episodes a week. Make sure that you click subscribe so you get new episodes in your queue all the time. But also, my must-watch list that comes out at katecasey.substack.com on Mondays, which is my list of what to watch in unscripted TV, reality shows, documentaries, docuseries. I also have a second newsletter attached to it called What to Listen To. So now each week I will give you recommendations of great podcast episodes and also great audiobooks. So make sure you check that out. katecasey.substack.com. The first of my two guests in this episode is Ginger Volo, formerly Ginger Duggar. She's one of the Duggar children, subject of 2 television shows, 19 Kids and Counting, which aired on TLC from 2008 to 2015, and Counting On, which began airing on TLC in 2015, as well as several TV specials, which began airing in 2006. Ginger's parents, Jim Bob and Michelle Duggar, raised their children following the teachings of Bill Gothard's Institute in Basic Life Principles. Viewers would watch as Jim would espouse his family's deep beliefs about modesty, homeschooling, and obedience with the backdrop of their property in Arkansas. But I have to say, over time, viewers could not help but wonder how so many minor children were being compensated for participating in the show, and also grew increasingly uncomfortable with the way that the sisters were required to have a chaperone on dates. Did the children have any choices in their life? How much control did their father and their belief system have over their lives? And this all became more concerning when allegations about the eldest child, son Josh Duggar, came to light. Josh Duggar was the executive director of FRC Action, a lobbying political action committee sponsored by the Family Research Council, from June of 2013 to May of 2015. He left this position when news broke that he had molested multiple underage girls, including a victim under 5 years old when he was between the ages of 14 to 15. These revelations led to the cancellation of 19 Kids and Counting in 2015. And in April of 2021, he was arrested by U.S. Marshals on charges of receiving and possessing child pornography. He was found guilty on all charges in December of 2021 and was sentenced to over 12 years in prison in May of 2022. In the meantime, Ginger, like her sisters Jessa and Jill, married and started their own families. And with outside exposure, began to reevaluate their own belief systems. So at 29, she's the mother of 2 girls, and in her new book recounts the process of what she calls disentangling her personal beliefs about faith from the ones she learned growing up. So what I ask you to think about as you listen to our interview is to remember that she's not only entangling her own belief system, but years of trauma. And it will take years to process. And as you will hear, coming forward puts her at great risk of losing relationships with some of the members of her family. So I was really glad to talk to her, and I'm looking forward to having you all listen. Also in this episode, I get an update from Jay Edelson from Edelson PC about the Girardi case. He has been a guest several times. On February 1st, 2023, Tom Girardi was charged with 5 counts of wire fraud for stealing money from clients from 2010 to 2020. He and another lawyer, his son-in-law, at his old firm Girardi Keyes, still face 8 counts of wire fraud and 4 counts of criminal contempt of court. And while Erica, his wife, has not been charged with anything, the Department of Justice says that the investigation into her actions is still ongoing, as we discuss deeper in this episode. Tom Girardi's wife, Erica, is a cast member on Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. So my first guest is Ginger Volo and then Jay Edelson. Remember to click subscribe, leave a 5-star review, and join the Facebook group Reality Life with Kate Casey to talk about this episode and others. So here are my guests, Ginger and Jay. Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way that you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. And the best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman, and they pass the savings on to us. So I just got a 100% organic cotton tiered maxi skirt in red and a chiffon pleated midi skirt in soft pink. Now I'm going to wear both of them with either a white scoop t-shirt or a black tank top. In fact, wait, should we all get the same outfit and meet for drinks? Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/KateCasey for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/KateCasey to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/KateCasey. This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. If you're looking for new style inspiration, Saks.com is the place to go. Saks.com is making it easy for me to shop for the spring with their selection of chic clothes and accessories. Right now, I'm looking at Saks.com so I can find my new going out vibe. I'm looking for a breezy Zimmermann dress for an evening cocktail party. And for my upcoming conference in Los Angeles, I'm looking at bright Chloe blazers because I'm pushing myself to wear more orange and pink. Saks.com will inspire you to shop for everything on your agenda. So find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com. Ginger Duggar's book is called Becoming Free Indeed. I read it in one sitting. It is such a great pleasure to talk to her today. I've been following this family for quite some time. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Kate.
I was really touched by your book. And first, I want to tell you that I think the way that you and your sisters have stepped forward and found your own power is an enormously powerful message. And I want to first honor you and all of you for what you're doing for other young women. So first, thank you for doing that.
Oh, thank you so much.
You and your siblings were part of this incredibly popular TLC show. Unbelievably, you were 10 years old when this all began. And it was these short specials on TLC. And the irony is that the entire time that your lives were being filmed for TV, you never actually watched TV.
Yeah, it is pretty crazy. We were on reality TV for most of my life, and we did not have cable TV in our house.
How easy was it for your family to let in so many crew members? Because a reality television show requires quite a bit of people as part of the crew. What was that like? Because, you know, you grew up in sort of an insular community. What was that decision like to include so many other people into your lives to follow you?
I was so young that whenever I would look around and be like, oh, these crew members, it was the same ones most of the time. And so they became like family to us. I really viewed them as like my closest friends coming to follow me doing whatever I was doing that day. And so that's part of it. It was like, if it was a different crew every day, it would have been really crazy. But it was a lot of the same core people who I'm still friends with to this day.
But and just to skip forward then, when a show like yours ends because they become such a part of your life, is there a part of you that mourns that, having those people in your daily life?
Yeah, for sure. I think that I just had, you know, coffee with one of them recently. I was texting one yesterday. It's interesting because they really feel like those are the people that I spent most of my life with. Mm-hmm. And then when they're not in my house every day, it's kind of sad. So there is a sadness there on that side. It's not because I miss the filming side of it. It's just because I miss their friendships.
Also, I think that siblings are incredible for that same reason, which is somebody being witness to your life. It seems like it would be very important to have those relationships because they're an outsider, yet they've been witness to so many of your memories.
Yes, that's for sure. That's how I view it. It's interesting because even through they saw me from 10 all the way up until just a couple of years ago when the show ended. And so they have probably a better perspective of my life in many ways than even some of my other friends would have that I'm closer with today, because they saw me changing and growing, going through teen years and all of that. Like it's so interesting.
But then also being on TV opens you up to a whole other set of concerns that one could never even imagine. The glare of the public eye, the pressure that comes with presenting your family as it is on television. And you do a beautiful job of explaining in the book how that, coupled with growing up under the teachings of Bill Gothard, a conservative minister who founded the Institute in Basic Life Principles, it sounded like it created anxiety in your life. First, I wanted to talk a little bit about Bill Gothard, just to give people some context. Mm-hmm. Your parents start listening to his teachings not long after married. Bill Gothard, you explain, was the most important influence in your life outside of your family. So his conservative teachings encourage Bible memorization, large families, homeschooling, aversion to debt, male superiority and female obedience, and conservative dress. Now, what I thought was most interesting and important to note is that Bill Gothard has never been married nor had children. So he's 88 years old right now. So we're talking about an unmarried man without children dictating principles down to a woman's menstrual cycle.
Yeah.
For somebody never married, never had children. That is the stranglehold that he has on the people that are following his teachings. He also teaches that adult children are still beholden to their own parents' opinions and beliefs. That's even if they have their own families. So a young couple is under the counsel of father and father-in-law, mother and mother-in-law. So in theory, you would still have to ask permission about everything from the way you worship to buying a home or how to raise your children by, again, a man never married nor had children.
Right.
So, and then the people will end up suffering consequences for violating any of those principles. So I thought that it was important, and I think there's so many people that can relate to that, who grow up in their own life circumstances or under the teachings of a religious figure, how that caused fear in your own life.
Yeah, there's a lot there. Wow. It was interesting because that was my mindset, was viewing his teachings as the teachings of God. And so it was really, really tough for me to be raised under that and think, okay, I view God as waiting to smite me at any turn. If I step outside of a box, I might be killed in a car accident because of it. If I feel like, oh, I'm supposed to stay and read my Bible and I go play a sport with my siblings, maybe I'll be in a car accident. So I would be very petrified with fear. And I thought that what Bill Gothard had to say was what God required of me. And so it was hard for me to be able to divorce the two. Mm. And that is something that I struggled with for many years, figuring out, okay, well, I would try to do all these teachings, but it wouldn't ever get better. It wasn't like the more you're working towards it, the more you're obeying his teachings, the less fear you have. It doesn't always work that way because you're just more afraid. Like, what am I not doing right? What am I not doing right? And fighting for that peace was something that was hard because inside I had inner turmoil, and all the while I'm on the show and I'm walking through all these seasons of life in a public way. And so, of course, keeping a lot of things just internally, I wasn't sharing any of that on the show because part of his teaching was, you know, you're always trying to be a light to the nations, keep up this smile and this perfect happiness that you must have at all times. And so it doesn't allow for a realness. I think you miss the point of what should come from the inside out, which would be like a true heart transformation or a desire to do something great or to even want to walk according to the Bible, was not the driving motivation for it. It was fear out of this crippling view of like, I'm going to be in trouble. I'm going to die. I'm going to have all this harm come upon me if I don't stay in the system. That's what was driving me to be someone I wasn't. And so it wasn't until I stepped outside of that world and saw, wow, that's crazy. It was so based on fear. Mm-hmm. And that's not who God is. It's not like the fear of God is like a healthy reverence of God. It's not this like he's always out to get me. I'm just going to step outside of a box. I don't know. I don't even know what art I'm supposed to have on my walls. Maybe it's going to bring me harm. Maybe I can't listen to this kind of music because it's going to cause me to have like issues in my life.
Well, you even get an example that he says at one point, well, you know, if you listen to rock music, specifically music with drums, that there will be harm put upon you, and that someone was listening to music in their car and then was in a car accident the next day. So if you take children and then you're teaching this to children who have a very little world, you know, perspective, that can be suffocating. And also this notion that the things that you do, his love for you is based on the things you do. Mm-hmm. At one point you start to develop an eating disorder. And you begin to recognize that you're falling apart in some ways. Mm-hmm. At that point, what is the shift in your life that you see? There's something more here, that the pressure of being in the public eye, the pressure of the teachings, the pressure to fit up to a standard that has been given to you. How are you able to see that and shift out of it?
Hmm. Yeah, I know that whenever I was like in that system, like I said, I was trying to do all these rules, trying to keep up with everything. And I think at the age of 14, when I was like, I truly saw Jesus for who he was and like not this performance-based thing. That's where I first had this shift in a sense, but then sadly I was still in that system. So it only, because I love Jesus, I was like, okay, well, how do I please Jesus? And so I went to these teachings to find the answers instead of going to the Bible to see like, okay, what does it actually say? And that was where I started like, okay, well, I was really confused. I started trying to figure it all out. And it wasn't until later on, I saw like my brother-in-law who was from outside of the system, his family did things a little different than us. And it kind of was like, okay, well, why is their life okay? Why don't they have any issues right now? Like harm's not coming upon them and they're outside of the system. And then it wasn't until my now husband, Jeremy, came on the scene where he was going to listen to 60 plus hours of these Bill Gothard's teaching because he was asked to before we could move forward to engagement. And it was the best thing that could have happened because he started listening to some of these teachings, and a few of them will be like, he'll have some like philosophical things to say. And so he listened to a couple of those first. And the further in he got, he was like, this guy's not a Bible teacher. Because we had always claimed he was. And he was like, he's not a Bible teacher. And the further in he got, then he was like, oh, this is actually really damaging. Did you hear what he said? He would take one passage of the Bible or one verse, not even a passage, a verse of the Bible, and would twist it to say whatever he wanted. And then he would make you have a vow, make a vow before God to keep it. And he would say, keep the vow that you've made to God. So it was very deceptive, very fear-based and oriented. So Jeremy just said, oh, like look at the word of God and examine it according to the Bible. And that's what actually first made me realize how warped this view was that I always thought I had, you know, of God that was good and it wasn't good. And I started to see, wow, this is why I'm experiencing so much fear in my life. This Absolutely. Is why I think that a relationship with Jesus is about doing things. Even though I never would have said that, that's how it practically played out. It was like, to gain favor with God, I'm going to do X, Y, Z, and then he'll be happy with me today, or he's not happy with me. And it was very eye-opening.
So privately, are you struggling with, in a sense, that Jeremy, with your participation, are going against the teachings that your parents held so dear to themselves? So are you concerned they might not want me to marry him because at some point we're going to have to tell them that we don't agree with what Bill Gothard is teaching?
That thought did cross my mind initially, just thinking, okay, we have differences in this. And so it, at that time though, it was so fresh and so new. I was thinking, okay, I want to take time to like spend time to examine this for myself and to not talk to anyone about it right away. I just want to like search this out because I don't know all the ins and outs of it. And the further in I got, the more I saw, okay, whenever something's not aligned with the Bible, that's where I go to for all of the answers to life's questions. And I was following a man instead of following God's word. And that just, it just totally shifted in my mind. And yeah. I was able to distinguish like, okay, this is wrong. This is true. And it just took so many years to get there. So those conversations didn't happen right away. It took me time of just searching it out for myself, not even just with Jeremy, but just on my own, looking and seeing, okay, what is Bill Gothard saying? What does the Bible actually say? And that was the most freeing thing for me.
Well, I should also note, in 2014, he stepped down from the IBLP after 34 women accused him of sexual harassment and molestation, with some incidents allegedly occurring when the victims were minors. In 2016, Gothard and the IBLP were sued by a group of alleged victims. The lawsuit was dismissed in 2018 as the statute of limitations had been exceeded. Did your parents feel betrayed by this once this came to light?
I think a lot of us in that system at that time thought, okay, we're going to see if any of this seems to be true, because we almost can push it out of our minds. I'll speak for myself. I thought, okay, if he is such a teacher used by God, like in such a good way, how could this happen? So maybe this is just false accusations. Mm-hmm. And I was still like in that system so much to where it was hard for me to like even accept that. And it wasn't until years later that I was just heartbroken, really, that it could have actually happened. And I think once I came out of these teachings, I was walking out of these teachings, and then I was like, it makes sense, of course. Like that totally makes sense how it could have happened, because I never thought it could, right? And so mm-hmm. then I started re-examining a lot of that and just saying, okay, I pushed it out of my mind because I didn't want it to be true. I thought this man was a prophet from God. So it wasn't until years later, really, that I acknowledged, oh, wow, this is crazy. This actually happened.
Which makes complete sense. I feel like I've spoken to so many people that have been part of churches that are cults or like cults, and it's such a long process to unravel. And I think that becoming a mother, while one of the most profoundly joyful experiences, it could also be painful, because you're holding and raising your own child makes you reflect on the experience of your own childhood, which can be difficult sometimes. And you note in your book that your brother's, Joshua's fall has been more devastating because he claims to be a man of Christian conviction. The backlash against his actions have been correctly severe. Even if he wasn't a public figure, he would still be in prison for his actions. But because millions know who Josh is, his sin gives Christ a bad name. How have you been able to begin to entangle your parents' views, your brother's choices, Bill Gothard's views, all of those things to chart your own faith journey?
Yeah, it's been challenging. I think at the end of the day, I know that, for one, I will say about my brother's choices, I'm so grateful that justice is being served, and my heart just breaks for the victims and their families. And for Bill Gothard's fall and all of that. I think that's what the heart of this book is about, though, is just talking about how you can try to put up all these outward standards. You can put up rules for people to follow, and they can have on this outward facade of being okay. And it's so easy to hide behind that. But true transformation doesn't come by putting on all these rules. It's going to come from the inside out. And that's a work that only God can do. And so for someone like my brother, I would pray that one day he truly is broken over what he's done and changes. And at the same time, I would see you can't just put on all this stuff to make that happen. Like it's nothing that you can do and in and of yourself of like, clean up this outside, put on, don't wear this kind of clothes, you know, don't listen to this kind of music. That's not going to get you anywhere. That will only mask what's truly inside, and what is truly inside will eventually come out. And where I've been able to disentangle has been seeing Jesus for who he truly is, because people will always let you down inside the church, sadly, outside the church, anywhere. We'll have relationships that just are, they are marred, they're messed up, and people will always let us down, but God will never let me down. And that's where I turn as my hope. I see who Jesus truly is, not who even these teachers may have said he was, and how he deals with his those who are his own, and like the care that he provides, and how that's where I run to for peace and strength, even to speak out on this stuff. It's been so tough, but I know that it's worth it if one person can come out of this teaching and can see Jesus for who he truly is.
My last two quick questions are, you know, I thought about your sister Jana in the book, because there are these rules that you can't leave home until you're married. And we saw on television that she was responsible for the care of so many of your siblings. People want the best for her in the same way they wanted the best for you and your sisters. Is she at any point, do you think she's going to leave home, or is there a way that you could set her up with somebody? I think we're all just like...
We thought about setting her up with someone.
I mean, can I set her up with somebody?
Sure, go for it. At the end of the day, I think I'll let her speak for herself and where she is. But of course, I just, you know, would want the best for her as I would for any of my siblings. And I just want to like share my story in hopes that even me sharing my journey will help anyone still in that system to see hopefully what God's word actually says about how we're supposed to live.
And then my last question is, I always feel like when I talk to anybody who's been in a similar position as you, obviously all very different walks, there are residual effects from an environment like the one that Gothard cultivated and the strict circumstances that you were raised under. Authority is such a big theme for the IBLP. Do you have somebody that you can check in with just periodically to go, you know, I'm still in a place where I have my own freedom, that I'm not under the authority of anybody else, because it feels like this is going to be a lifetime journey for you.
Yeah, I would definitely say that is still part of this thing. It is a journey, and this disentangling process is still continuing, because it's not something that just, I mean, in my mind, it shifts overnight. But then at the same time, there are lasting effects. And so it takes many years. And for many, I think it can take a lifetime to walk out of something like that and still to be able to realize, okay, well, I need to think on what is reality and what is true instead of what I was taught was true by this teacher. So yes, I think that that's something that I have an awesome support group around me. I have those I'm able to talk to and be so open with, and I'm so thankful for that community. I really believe that even speaking out in fear of like maybe losing the other community I grew up in, I realize I have this amazing support, which has also been what I needed to be able to speak out.
Well, I just want to conclude by saying once again, I've tremendous respect for you for using your voice, using your platform, finding your power, and encouraging especially other women, because you were not raised in a community that always saw women as equal partners. And I think that this is a really important message in 2023. And I know you did this at the risk of losing relationships or harming relationships with those in your family. Tell everybody where they can find it and where they can follow you.
Thank you for that. And yes, if you want to find my book, Becoming Free Indeed, it's wherever books are sold. But if you go to our website, Ginger, J-I-N-G-E-R, and Jeremy.com, then we have the link to all the books there.
Thank you again.
Thank you so much for having me.
Whether you need to buy or sell, or you're just obsessed with looking at homes for sale, Redfin's got you covered. Redfin updates their listings every 2 minutes so you can see new homes first. And they give you personalized recommendations based on the homes that you like, so you can find the home that's just right for you, whether that's a cabin, a craftsman, or a castle. With the top-rated Redfin app, you can favorite homes, share listings with others, and schedule tours, and even on the same day, with a local Redfin agent who can help guide you through the whole home buying process. And if you're looking to sell, Redfin agents have the experience to get you the best price possible for your home. That's because they sell twice as many homes as other agents. With a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin's fees are half of what others often charge, which means you'll have more money to put towards what matters most to you, like your next home. In fact, last year, Redfin saved home sellers $127 million. No matter where you are in your real estate journey, Redfin can help. Download the Redfin app to get started today.
Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
Welcome back to the show. I've been dying to talk to you about new updates in the Girardi case. So welcome back.
Thanks a lot. This is a pretty exciting time.
Well, on February 1st of this year, an indictment was returned in U.S. District Court in Chicago charging Tom Girardi and David Lira, both of whom work for the firm Girardi Keese, with 8 counts of wire fraud and 4 counts of criminal contempt of court. The indictment also charges a third defendant, Christopher Kamen, who worked at Girardi Keese's head of accounting and finance, with the same offenses. Arraignments in federal court in Chicago have yet to be scheduled. What do you make of the latest update? Walk us through.
Sure. So there are 2 sets of indictments that have happened. One is in federal court in Chicago, and one is in federal court in LA. And that might be confusing to some people. Why would there be 2 sets of indictments? And the reason is that in LA, they're focused on the broader Ponzi scheme. As you know, we've been talking about this for years. Our view is that Girardi Keese was operating really as a criminal enterprise and stealing money from clients for decades. In Chicago, they're focused on the Lion Air fraud specifically. Thank goodness that this is all starting, that people are being criminally prosecuted. I'm thrilled that Tom was indicted. There's going to be a lot of work to be done by the prosecutors over issues of competency. I'm thrilled that David Lira was indicted, and I think he's in big, big trouble. But also, if you listen to the press conference, the prosecutors made it very clear that this is just the beginning of the indictments. And there's a third set of prosecutors who are very focused. So if you are, a random blonde housewife who has her own reality show, your ears probably perked up when you found out that the IRS, their criminal division, is investigating this too. That was very bad news for Erica Jayne. But we're expecting that that there are going to be a lot of other indictments, lawyers and other people associated with the Girardi crime family.
When do you suspect those indictments will be made?
So, I don't know. The prosecutors don't tell me that. There's a lot of rumblings. We actually had thought that there were going to be additional indictments, additional people indicted last week. Keith Griffin, who was involved in the Lion Air theft. We've understood for some time that he'll be indicted. And we have our guesses why that hasn't happened yet. And we know there are a few others who we're very sure are going to be indicted too. But in terms of when, we really don't know. I'm hoping soon.
Why do you think it took this much time for the indictments to be returned?
It was a really long, elaborate Ponzi scheme. And when you're bringing in a criminal case, it's not like a civil case where for us, we can bring the case and we then have a lot of time to get discovery from the other side, depose people, try before a jury. In a criminal case, you really have to have all the evidence when you file. You have to be able to prove your case right then. And I think they wanted to make sure that they had a really tight case. I also suspect, and I do not know this to be the case, but I suspect that a lot of the people that they've been targeting, question is whether they would start flipping on others in the crime syndicate. And that process takes some time as well. That's my suspicion of why Keith hasn't been indicted yet. Just my personal suspicion. But if you know Keith at all, if there is one person who's going to rat everybody out, it is Keith Griffin.
What would precipitate somebody ratting everybody out? What position, legal position are they in where they finally get to the point where they rat people out?
It depends how much the prosecutors need them. So someone like Keith probably has a lot of information about other attorneys, the ones who are named David and Tom. It's hard to know because there's so much evidence that they have that's just in the documents that I don't feel like they're going to need to rely on witnesses for Tom and David, except when it comes to competency. So in the Girardi case specifically, that's going to be the first battle, which is he competent to stand trial? And the test is whether he can meaningfully contribute to his own defense. We've said for a while that we think that he is faking it. Mm-hmm. If you saw like the pictures that that were taken of him going into court, he looked like a 140-year-old man. What I heard from others who saw him when the cameras weren't rolling, he was very spry and had some pep in his step.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen his medical records, but my view. He's a liar. He's been a liar his whole life. Mm-hmm. And him kind of continuing that, isn't that surprising? So it'll be interesting to see what the actual experts say and whether he's competent to stand trial. He ought to be. As the prosecutor said, there's no question he was competent as he was carrying out the Ponzi scheme.
Certainly. Well, if he is pulling off the greatest con of his career right now, pretending that he has cognitive issues, would you think, based on your experience with him and your just experience in law, that he's doing that to protect himself and Erica, or just to protect Erica?
That's a funny question. It didn't even occur to me that he'd be worried about anybody other than himself. Mm. So if he wanted to protect other people, then he would, assuming he is competent, he would plead guilty, and in exchange for the guilty plea, since he really is the kingpin, they would, I'm sure, give lighter sentences to other people. That I don't think that's what he cares about. I think he's just in protect Tom mode, and I think he always has been.
So for those that have sort of doubted this whole time that Erica could be complicit, the fact that these indictments have come down, there are only three attorneys named. You mentioned in the press conference that there was mention of more coming down. Is there a possibility that Erica may not have any criminal exposure?
So I think when we spoke the first time, you asked me about her criminal exposure, and I said I just didn't see it. I have a different view now. So there's two parts of it. One is whether she participated in the Ponzi scheme, which obviously would be criminal. And you know, we think that we're going to be able to prove before a civil jury that she benefited from it. We know that Tom was using her as a front woman, that he would, even when they signed up the Lion Air, this people haven't heard before, but even when he signed up the Lion Air clients, a part of the presentation was Tom's married to Erica Jane and she's this rich celebrity and that shows how successful he is.
So in other words, like almost like their RFP includes, part of the presentation includes a photo of Erica Girardi?
An explanation of who she is, yes.
That's bananas.
But it is bananas, but also, I mean, it does make some sense where, you know, these are people in Indonesia and what you're saying is this is an incredibly successful attorney and they're very powerful and influential. And I think it did have some effect. And he brought her to other meetings with lawyers and stuff and would show her off. This is our whole front woman theory. Mm. And anyway, but so we've got all of that. I don't know if the extent to which she was involved in kind of the decisions to steal money. I know she benefited from it and I know she was used as the front woman. I think that her criminal exposure really comes from the IRS. So she signed these joint tax returns and, you know, one thing which is not intuitive to most people is that if you actually steal money, you've got to report that as income. And if you don't, you get into trouble even criminally with the IRS. That's how Al Capone went down. They weren't able to prove that he committed all these crimes, but they were able to prove tax fraud. So that's where I think she actually could have a ton of liability. Tom was stealing tens of millions of dollars. I'm sure he wasn't reporting as income. She signed off on that. That's what would keep me up at night if I were her lawyer. But luckily I'm not.
So what can we expect in terms of next steps? What should we be looking for in the timeline?
So the next big thing is the competency hearing with Tom. And that will play out. That'll be interesting. And then it's going to be, I assume, more indictments of other people.
And did I read that he fired his attorney and now he wants different representation?
I believe he's being represented by a public defender now.
And what do you make of that?
Not a ton. It would be hard for him if he did squirrel away money. It would be hard for him to pay a private attorney with that money because the feds would say, "Where'd that come from?" He could get friends to pay for that, but that might cause problems too for them. But I don't think hiring a public defender is a bad thing. A lot of federal public defenders and state public defenders are really good. And I don't know, I mean, the only way he wins is on the competency issue. It's not like they're going to be able to beat back the actual charges. He ran a Ponzi scheme. He stole tons of money.
So my last question is, and I revisit this often with you, in the end, or at least at this point, has it helped or hindered Erica to continue to be part of the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, given the legal situation involving herself and her husband?
That's an interesting question. The number of things that she said on the show have been so bad for her, And we're definitely going to use that as we're prosecuting our civil claims. And we're going to be able to show that she was lying to the public. And she has a truth problem. She lies all the time. And she lied about some key things, including about the financial condition of Girardi Keys and her family when she knew that they were out of money. And that's going to be a big part of our story. On the other hand, she's got this huge platform. She's got a very rabid fan base. And she makes money off of that. I don't know how she would make money otherwise. I don't know. You would know that much better than I do. I don't have a ton of cases, you know, against Real Housewives.
Well, I know, but legally, putting yourself in a position where somebody can go through every single piece of film to see, cross-reference that with statements that you made in court, it seems like you're setting yourself up for disaster. So there are two worlds at play here. There's the television persona, and then there's the real life legal situation. And so I'm often trying to figure out what's really going on between those two worlds.
So legally, any good lawyer would say if her concern was just limiting liability, civil and criminal, that she shouldn't be saying anything, certainly shouldn't be on a reality show where her life is being taped. I don't know. I don't know what type of advice she's been getting. Her comments about what's been happening in the different court proceedings seem so random. I can't tell if she's lying about them or if she truly just isn't getting good advice from her attorney. Mm. But we'll see. But all these claims, you know, every month that she's been totally vindicated, which show up in the tabloids, like it still says that, you know, cases were dismissed against her, which weren't dismissed. You know, they're refiled just in a different jurisdiction. But that's not the goal in a case, is to win, you know, kind of public opinion from reality fans. Mm-hmm. You got to convince a court and a jury who are going to look at the actual facts.
Well, this case continues to just be fascinating. And I'm so grateful that you continue to give us updates. And I know how hard your team works on this case. And as always, I say it all the time, but the victims are the most important component of this story.
I do think that the victims deserve to see a trial where he's there, where he's got to sit through it every day, hear their stories, and then ultimately get convicted.
Well, if he is a con, which I believe he is, he can compartmentalize in a courtroom, which he wouldn't be the first to do that. I do know that, I believe in the last season, she did note that they talk often. So how does that complicate her case if she has admitted on television that they speak often?
Yeah, it's bad for both of them, right? If he's incompetent, how is it they're having these conversations? Tom had a phone call, which Ron Richards recorded, where he seemed pretty with it. That wasn't good for him in terms of competency. And, you know, for her, it's just more lies. I mean, in the show, she was saying, oh, I don't talk to him at all. And this is totally done. And, you know, I think it supports our argument that the whole divorce was a sham. You know, she filed for divorce because she knew that that the cards were crashing down.
Unbelievable. Well, as always, people can follow you on Twitter at Jay Edelson. And, anything else that they should know or keep in mind as we continue to follow updates?
So I never plug anything. You know that. I want to plug something now.
Yeah, you should.
Okay. So this is going to be strange to a lot of people, but we actually put out a music video called The Rebellion. And it is about the Tom Girardi, Erika Jayne scandal. It's a fun video, written by a very talented lawyer at the firm, highly produced. Erika Jayne, there's a character of her and then a Tom Girardi character. The reason that we're doing that is that we really want to take this issue and make sure that something good comes of it, which is reform. The California bar is a total disaster. They're still protecting Tom and a lot of other attorneys. It's a total disgrace. And you know, the plaintiffs bar, which I'm part of, has to wake up. And so we want people not to think this is a one-off incident. We want people to realize we need to have real structural reform. And we're hoping, you know, in this kind of oddball way of putting out a music video, that that'll help. So please, I ask people, check it out. And if you like it, that's great.
I will post it everywhere. It's really funny, but also eye-opening. And that is the most important thing, is that in the end, we hope that with this story, that there is some real reform and things make a huge shift, because Girardi was at the helm of a huge criminal enterprise, which we should all be horrified was done under so many people's watch.
Since the 80s. The Aaron Brockovich attorney was apparently stealing money from the Aaron Brockovich clients. That's how long it goes.
Unbelievable. Well, great music video and well produced. And so my hat's off to the team for that as well. Thank you as always for all your updates.
Thank you very much. Always nice talking to you.
The amazing Kate Casey.
I want to thank Jay and Ginger and remind you again to click subscribe, leave a 5-star review, join the Facebook group, Reality Life with Kate Casey. You can find me on social media on Twitter at Kate Casey. I tweet about shows and during shows all week long. Instagram @KateCaseyCA. TikTok, it's Kate Casey. Patreon for bonus episodes if you go to Patreon, patreon.com/KateCasey. My must-watch list is available at katecasey.substack.com. I have amazing guests coming next week. I've got 2 Real Housewives of Miami. I have the executive producer of Full Swing, which is a Netflix docuseries about the golf industry. It's excellent. And then the most interesting true crime docuseries called The 12th Victim. I interview the director, Nicola Marsh. It is out on Showtime this coming next week. So much for you to watch. And make sure you, again, click subscribe so you get all new episodes. Thank you, as always, for listening. And I will circle back with you in the next episode, which is what to watch for the week.
Murder on My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus, explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of 2 young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When 2 of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one, but 2 trials that ended in hung juries and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law & Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core? Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.